Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. I'm your co-host, Ron Edwards, coming to you from the Twin Cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul on this, the Wednesday's edition of the Donnie Ronnie political program. This is Black Political Radio, if you will. We'll be joined shortly by my co-host, Mr. Donald W.G. Allen, who is at the airport here in the Twin Cities, awaiting a flight that is coming in. And it was imperative that he carry out that responsibility, as this has some political implications, if you will. But tonight's program will be in the tradition of the Donnie and Ronnie hour and a half, actually, this evening. Many are in the process of celebrating Thanksgiving on tomorrow, if you will. Millions of Americans traveling, both on the highways and through the air and by rail, if you will. People still ride the trains in this country. Amtrak has its ups and downs, but it still attempts to deliver people from point A to point B, if you will. Though far too many of the routes in this country are more east to west than north to south. I just don't think we have enough north to south routes, railroad, if you will, here in the United States. I'd like to see some Amtraks out of Texas, even up here to Minnesota and the Dakotas and Wisconsin and et cetera. It used to be that way in the old days, but like it's oftentimes said, we can't have it like it used to be. We have to modernize and et cetera. So we take that with a grain of salt, if you know what I mean. A lot of things going on. International scene, we feel compelled to kind of check what is happening. In the South China Sea, ever since Saturday, when two American B-52 super bombers flew into what the Chinese maintain is their new air security zones, if you will, defense zones. The United States indicating it does not recognize those limits, if you will. The United States basically only recognizes, 6 miles as it pertains to sovereignty, territorial airspace, and such things as that. Of course, the Chinese have been engaged in a serious dispute with the Japanese over a couple of islands that are nothing more than rocks, but they are more symbolic, if you will, with the issue of national pride, national sovereignty, if you will, and just kind of pumping one's chest. Chinese, though, have become extremely serious in their political and military thinking with regards to these disputed islands. And part of apparently what happened Saturday is a escalation now since Saturday. Diplomatic sources have been talking, if you will, backdoor, as they like to call it, trying to get the two sides, the United States and China, to stand down, if you will. Though China, and by the way, there is a news blackout here in the United States. You really have to go to your shortwave radio sets, if you will, for those of the many of you that have them. That's why they're so important. You get a chance to hear what's going on in the rest of the world. And sometimes, particularly as it pertains to the United States, in a manner which is not sanitized, if you will. Oh, I know we all like to think that there's absolute freedom of expression here in the United States, and the American news media would not think about sanitizing any kind of story. But just this issue in the South China Sea and actually in the North China Sea has clearly displayed sanitizing of the information, if you will. The deployment of China's only aircraft carrier, but it's still a lethal force, if you will, into the disputed area raises questions about the possibility of a military response, if you will. Chinese have indicated that they reserve the right to launch air defense mechanisms. When they say that, they're talking about air or ground-to-air missiles, if you will. And though each side works very hard to find out what the other side has, there are always surprise packages. As Edward Snowden pointed out in some of the material and information he has given to China, Russia, Brazil, and some others as it pertains to his exploits in the NSA, National Security Agency. And so everyone has been watching closely the deployment of the Chinese aircraft carrier and escort ships, if you will. Normally an aircraft carrier goes out. It has a little flotilla of anywhere from 3 to 4 to 5 destroyers, if you will, probably accompanied by submarines. So you have to figure that maybe a couple of submarines, both diesel and maybe even possible nuclear, have been deployed by the Chinese. The United States obviously has responded, putting its so-called Pacific Fleet on notice, if you will. There is some concern that the Chinese may decide to set up a defense perimeter between their newly declared defense zone and Guam, where the American B-52s came from. And that continues to be a point of contention and concern. But the American media has basically been told to basically be very low-keyed, with the exception of Barbara Starr, CNN's Pentagon correspondent, speaking of it, if you will, on Monday, this incident that had happened almost 48 hours earlier. The main American media juggernaut has stayed away from what is happening in that part of the world, also understanding that China is one of the United States' largest trading partner and vice versa, if you will. And, of course, the United States has a very significant monetary debt with the Chinese. Chinese own a whole lot more inside the United States than people want to fess up to. Another one of those subjects that we don't talk about in this country as it pertains to our relationships and sometimes our dependence. You know, we like to pretend that we're not dependent on anything. Of course, obviously, we are, if you will. So certainly we are keeping a close watch on the South China Sea, if you will. And military maneuvers that are going on, if you will, hopefully, as we said earlier, more soothing forces will get involved and the two sides will talk. In fact, what's ironic about this is that the Secretary of State is in that part of the world. In fact, he was supposed to be doing a kind of tour, China, Japan, and South Korea as a part of, I guess, I hope it isn't gunboat diplomacy, if you will, in the tradition of John Foster Dulles, who was Secretary of State long before many were probably born. But the Secretary of State is in that part of the world and certainly should be concerned. I do believe that he was in China today, if you will, which means that everything was very low-keyed. Chinese spokespersons, though, indicating that they intend to stand by their political and military decision as it pertains to declaring a security zone some number of miles off of the Chinese coast, if you will. You always get nervous about situations like this, and you rightly should, because, you know, for the last decade, longer than the last decade, this country has had a propensity for carrying out military actions leading to conflicts, leading to, in the tradition of the old British Empire, leading to the quote-unquote garrison or garrisoning of large numbers of America's sons and daughters, you know, for periods of 9, 10, 12 years, you know. It's really not funny when the body bags come home or when our wounded warriors return disfigured and et cetera, both physically and mentally, if you will. And, of course, we know and understand how fragile this nation is right now with regards to its politics, you know, the very extreme right, very extreme left, a great divide in the nation, and unfortunately much of it surrounding a man who has never looked like previous presidents, President Barack Obama, the black guy, if you will. In fact, it was about 15 months ago, 16 months ago, before the election of 2012, that Barack Obama was being called everything under the sun of God as it pertains to being less than human. In fact, earlier tonight on CNN, there was a kind of a reflection program, one of the TV programs, reflecting on the kind of ugliness that has emerged and certainly was in play in 2008, continued right up to 2012, was definitely in play in 2012, and has continued, particularly with the health care program, oftentimes referred to as Obamacare, as we said in our newspaper column here in the Twin Cities. When the resolutions were handed to the clerks of the House and the Senate, over 3 years ago, it didn't say Obamacare, you know what I mean? It talked about affordable care. But sounds better to keep people pumped up and fired up, if you will. Only problem is this country has shown that it does not handle that kind of stress very well, you know, be it Sandy Hook, if you will, or be it a shopping center in New Jersey, if you will, or be it on the campus of some school, college or et cetera, you know, being in another mall and those kinds of things. And certainly, if, you know, you're talking about an Aurora, Colorado, the movie theater and et cetera, we just have a lot of people who seem to be unbalanced. In fact, the report on the tragedy at Sandy Hook a year ago was released by the state of Connecticut just a couple days ago. And, of course, the gunman, the terrorist, if you will, is now being, well, he was back then, you know, starting off with killing his own mother while she was in her bed and then proceeding to kill 26 human beings, 20 of them, children, babies, if you will, six teachers or employees of the school district, and then, of course, committing suicide himself. Once again, the cover story has turned out to be that he was mentally unbalanced, which seems to be a way to not deal with a problem that seems to be extremely acute, with the exception of the Navy shipyards, that seems to be very acute to white America. We've always maintained as a journalist and historian that we just don't have the kind of discussion, the honest discussion in this country about that problem, if you will, about mental health and about the violence that goes with it and how it is so permanent, if you will, and prevalent in white America, if you will, and there is a permanency, if you will, with it, because it's something that just has continued to happen. People basically try to say it started at the on the campus of the University of Texas when, you know, a crazed man began to fire from the Texas Tower and et cetera. But these kinds of killings have been going on for a long time, these kinds of mass murders, if you will, people going off. But we've become more acutely aware here in America now because of media, cyber, if you will, information getting out extremely quick, people knowing, understanding, hearing. But with the exception of an Asian in Virginia, at Virginia Tech, an African-American contractor at the Navy shipyards, and, of course, folks still talk in terms of that situation in Southern California with a former Los Angeles police officer and Navy officer in the Navy Reserves, Mr. Dahmer, that it seems that this terrorism and the quote-unquote mental conditions are something that basically is the sole property of white America. But as we said before, as an African-American, we find it kind of distressful, if you will, that there's not more honesty with what it is that drives these people with this sickness. A situation in Virginia, though it only involved the suicide of a young man after apparently shooting his father, stabbing his father, I guess, and then in turn committing suicide. The story didn't quite match up. Health officials, mental health officials in Virginia now blaming each other. The deceased, his father, who is a popular state senator in Virginia, now expressing his outrage at the mental health board there in Virginia because they said there were no beds anywhere in Virginia, and later found out that there were at least, three beds somewhere in the state of Virginia that his son could have been admitted to the facility and treated for his mental condition, aggravations, and et cetera. But these are things that continue to happen, and we just don't seem to have a discussion here in the United States, an honest discussion. And we never will, by the way, going back to our comments just a couple minutes ago, we never will have an honest discussion about the race-based-driven animosity and hatred of Barack Obama for no other reason that he happened to be blessed enough, lucky enough, if you will, popular enough to be elected president of these United States in two consecutive elections, if you will. And people just don't fess up to why it is. It's just so difficult to have, quote-unquote, in the White House, if you will, this black man, this, as the birthers say, this man who actually was born everywhere but the United States of America, reject the existence and the authenticity of his birth certificate and everything else. Senator Ted Cruz, one of the great clowns of American politics, his daddy in the 2012 election said Barack Obama should go back to Kenya. He really probably said Barack Obama, President Barack Obama, should go back to Africa with the rest of the monkeys. And so you get these kinds of discussions, and that generates even more hostility. Of course, we all know the reputation of the crackhead commentator, Rush Limbaugh.
Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to Blog Talk Radio. If you desire to speak to the host, please press 1 at any time, and the host...
Oh, we had some slight interruption there. I think my colleague has returned or is en route, and so I'm expecting Mr. Allen to join us momentarily, hopefully, that he has come back and made it back from the airport. There seems to be enough time. But again, this is co-host Ron Edwards. This is the Wednesday edition of the Ron and Don Show, if you will, our Wednesday edition. My co-host is hopefully en route, as he has had an obligation and has been at the airport for a number of hours. Flights have been tied up, of course, all across the country. And certainly one has to account for what that means, particularly when you have people coming in, and they have been sitting in the airport for 4 or 5 hours at the previous location. So, you know, it's one of those situations where there has to be consideration and maximum accommodations, if you will. But continuing on with the events in our beloved nation, as we speak, of course, Thanksgiving tomorrow, people to give thanks. One of the things that does not happen as it pertains to honest discussions is that no one ever asked our Native American population their real feelings about Thanksgiving. I have a lot of Native American friends who I've known and worked with over the many, many years, and they really educate you on why Thanksgiving in many respects is so false and jaundiced, if you will, as it pertains to really what it means as we look at the history of the pilgrims, if you will, and they're landing on the shores of what they later refer to as the New Europe, if you will. There used to be a lot of things written and discussed back in those days as colonies were founded in places like Virginia and Massachusetts and New Amsterdam, which later became New York City, if you will, everyone laying claim. And people tend to also pay no attention to some of the claims that were being laid on the western coast of this nation, if you will, particularly by the Russians, if you will, Tsarist Russia, the Imperial Russia, if you will. People, you don't find as much history written about the Russian settlements along the coast of what we now, you know, identify as California and Oregon, Washington, if you will. There's not as much discussion about that as it is about the British and the Dutch, if you will, the Portuguese, if you will, particularly the Spanish, and et cetera. And I've never been quite sure on why there was always such a dismissal of the presence of the Russians, Imperial Russia, along the west coast of the United States for, you know, 130 years, if you will, because the Russians also knew how to build ships and come across. And there's been, you know, some rumors that folks came from also as equally as far away as China and Japan, if you will, and came ashore along the west coast before the Spanish, who came onto this continent basically from Mexico, what later was identified as Mexico, and then kind of swept up the west coast. But actually, long before the Spanish and others got here, there were others who had founded, quote-unquote, the United States. I'm always fascinated by the terminology of, what was his name, Christopher Columbus? That wasn't his real name, by the way, but that he had founded North America. Of course, we all know that Christopher Columbus thought he had founded the passage to India. He thought he was in India. That's how the indigenous people of this continent are now referred to in history books and treaties and other things as the Indians, if you will. By and large, people don't have a clue unless they seek out the indigenous people of what the indigenous people call themselves. And see, we're blessed here in Minnesota because there's still a rich Native American history here in the state of Minnesota, the Dakotas and Wisconsin. And the Native Americans here take great pride in retaining their history, if you will, and their lineage. And that's always important because we as Black Americans have lost so much as it pertains to our history, our being forced to come to this continent, if you will, and that has so much to do with some of the problems and the hostility and the rejection of the African American as equals, if you will, in this country. It really has a lot to do. That's another discussion, by the way. Maybe we will, when the phone lines are open over the next couple of weeks, have that kind of discussion about why there is such a rejection of the African American, the sons and daughters of the African, as a viable presence in this North American continent, South America also, if you will. It has so much to do, unfortunately, with the hostility and disdain for the current president of the United States, Barack Obama. In fact, I saw a couple polls here in the last couple of days indicating that his favorability, if you will, popularity is at a significant low, et cetera. Of course, in modern times, most second-term presidents in their second terms have low approval ratings, as they like to refer to them, people approving of what it is that they're doing. Of course, given the disaster that is, in fact, the health care, if you will, legislation, given what happened to the websites and et cetera, I can understand the frustration of any individual trying to access information. And yet the thing is puzzling is that probably the thing that the government should have done is just went over across the road, if you will, and just contracted with the NSA and the CIA, particularly the NSA, who is extremely proficient at putting together websites and programs and et cetera. We should have contracted with the NSA, had them put the system in place, because bottom line, NSA is going to, along with the FBI and the CIA and the National Defense Agencies, and I mean, you know, all of that, are going to access the information anyways in keeping an eye on the citizens of this country, if you will, making sure that everything is known about how we move, how we go about our business, who it is that we talk to, affiliate with, what we are thinking, what we should not be thinking, if you will, what we're believing and what we're not believing. That's the role of these super agencies. And so I've been really puzzled for the last month on why it was that the ball was dropped like it was, unless it was something done intentionally to embarrass President Barack Obama and his administration, and in many respects by the numbers as it pertains to approval rating, you know, in many respects that's been done, if you will. President's taking some real hits. Of course, he is just finishing up the first year of his second term, so, you know, he's been in office 5 years. He still has enough time, 3 years, to recapture the luster, if you will, to recapture the magic, if you will. And for the sake of the nation, if you will, we certainly hope for that. As we said earlier, there's a lot of fragileness in this nation. There's a lot of suspicion. There's a lot of anger. There's a lot of hatred, unfortunately. And so you always need a strong national leader that traditionally, since the founding of the Republic, you know, in 1776 and 1777 and et cetera, has been the president of the United States, if you will, with basically the Congress being the bad guys. And now we can say the bad guys and bad girls, in that there is a small number of women in both of the assemblies, if you will, the House and the Senate. But in a nation that has been so dependent upon its chief executive, its president, to quote-unquote lead them in those moments of trials and tribulations and et cetera, such as December 7th, 1941, if you will, Franklin Delano Roosevelt pulling the nation together, Franklin Delano Roosevelt 3 to 4 years prior pulling the nation together in the midst of the Depression and et cetera. One looks for that leadership. Of course, we talk about Teddy Roosevelt, and certainly we talk about Abraham Lincoln, and we talk about Andrew Jackson, and we talk about, you know, Jefferson, and we certainly talk about the so-called founding father, George Washington. And so these have been men of inspiration, if you will, who have always been looked to because of the title of president of these United States, to quote-unquote give us a sense of really of protection, if you will, of stability. And so one would hope that whatever the momentary bump in the road is, that the president of the United States, President Barack Obama, will be able to regain the popularity, and a year from now we'll be talking about approval ratings at 60%, 65%, 70%, or whatever, if you will. And the nation can kind of get started again, if you will. And certainly this is a nation that needs to do that. And as an African-American, as a black man, I certainly understand the importance of that happening, given that we continue as African-Americans, the sons and daughters of the African, continue to be at the bottom of the barrel for whatever reason, be it employment, be it housing, be it education, if you will, be it any aspect except for being incarcerated and being poverty-stricken and miseducated and undereducated. That seems to be a legacy that has been endowed to us in many respects, which is not healthy, you know, certainly not healthy for the subject, quote-unquote, of the misery, that being the African-American, but it's just not healthy for the nation. And again, it goes back to what we said a short time ago about the importance of understanding what it is that needs to happen in this country so that there's a certain sense of confidence and comfort that we all feel that we are a part of the success of the nation, if you will. And this has been a very successful republic. It has had an excellent history. It has basically enjoyed significant breaks, if you will, that have allowed it to prosper, allowed us as a nation to prosper, and et cetera. And yet, those of us who were brought here in chains and bondage always seem to be confronted with the fact that we have a curse upon us, that curse dictates that we shall always be the footmat of quote-unquote America. In fact, I'm always kind of disappointed in the last 7 or 8 years how other persons of color, people of color who have immigrated to this country, who have been able to do that because of the fights and the battles that have been mounted by the sons and daughters of the African, seem to think that we paid no price, if you will, for our freedom, that we did not do anything to deal with our circumstances, if you will, with the obstruction and obstructions that were placed before us and in our path and et cetera. And that is just so untrue. In fact, there's been discussion here in Minnesota's example, just kind of making it kind of a regional kind of reflection. We fought here 2 years ago, 2.5 years ago, that we would have a black museum, a history museum here in the state of Minnesota. And some folks, and particularly a well-known philanthropic individual, at least according to her own reflections, indicated that she was going to raise money and open a black museum here to give us a consistent reflection and understanding of the rich history of the Negro here in the state of Minnesota. Well, she raised over $3 million, and we still don't have a museum. In fact, all we have is an old building just down the street from our convention center here, just on the edge of downtown Minneapolis, that has now become a resting place for squirrels and other rodents and et cetera. And we in the African-American community have nothing to consistently reflect upon as the rich history of this state. I mean, a state that actually, during the time that things were being surveyed as they were working on the Canadian-U.S. border and et cetera, it was a black man by the name of Bongo, born and raised in Quebec, if you will, Canada, part of the Hudson Bay Company, if you will, that came here and surveyed the area, surveyed the things that needed to be in place in order for the boundaries to be determined. You can't even find anything other than maybe if you ask the curator at the Minnesota Historical Society to see if they can find in the basement somewhere something on Mr. Bongo, if you will. Now, his name is still a legend. Interesting enough, amongst many of the Native American tribes of northern Minnesota and southern Canada, particularly in Saskatchewan and Manitoba and Ontario, if you will, where his Hudson Bay Company was involved in setting the boundaries and et cetera. Great man, great history, if you will, coming out of, as we said, Quebec, Canada. By the way, there was no question about his nationality or race. He was, as they said, coal black, if you will. Actually, his heritage was out of Haiti, if you will. His family had migrated to Quebec, which was, of course, and still is, a French-speaking province of Canada, And, of course, that was the prevailing language in Haiti, French, if you will. And so there was a significant comfort level. Just a rich history, something that we need to touch on, if you will, because historically, educationally here in Minnesota, there's basically no accurate reflection about the contributions of the sons and daughters of the African. Some who come to us from other foreign places think we got here about the same time that they did. Of course, that's just not true. You know what I'm saying? We had a presence here as far back as the 1600s as it pertains to our presence, the presence of the African American, the sons and daughters of the African. All of this is important when you talk in terms of a holiday like Thanksgiving, going back to tomorrow's events and celebrations, if you will, because people get nostalgic, if you will, start talking about their lineage, if you will, you know, be they Norwegian or Finnish or Swedish or German, if you will, or French, if you will, or Dutch. And it's, you know, it's always interesting to hear them tell their stories of their lineage and et cetera. And basically everyone pretends that somewhere or another the African-American, the Negro, if you will, just kind of emerged out of a mist on the shores of the Atlantic Ocean, if you will, in North America. And it's really sad because it is a part of what becomes depressing to younger African-Americans who really think that their foreparents and forebears did not commit anything to the development of this nation, did not invent things, did not work for a long time, by the way, without compensation. By the way, on that particular point, I want to plug the movie 12 Years in Slavery, a just a hard-hitting movie. I would like to think that it would certainly be considered for some Academy Awards, if you will. The movie is just that strong. One of the things that I've noticed about the movie is that there is a kind of silence that follows this movie. Normally you got sometimes young folk will be talking and chit-chatting and et cetera, but there is a certain silence. There's a certain discipline. I've seen the movie a couple times already. I've talked to others who have gone to see it. There's a quietness. People are observing and absorbing the flow of information via the cinema, if you will. It's what, in many regards, Black America really needs to remind us of the genesis, if you will, the foundation for some of this hatred, if you will, that is basically amplified by the marginalizing and the hatred of President Barack Obama. But you have to understand that there's a long and tragic history of how folks, quote-unquote, felt that they needed to deal with us, the African-American, the sons and daughters of the African, to keep us in our place, to use us, quote-unquote, as a counterbalance in maintaining the kind of reflections that keep a nation divided and allows those who have already consolidated power to continue to hold that power, and in some cases now in a disproportionate manner. A lot of discussions now going on in the United States after the shutdown, government shutdown, by the way, that the United States really needs to take a look at its current form of elective government, because people finally woke up and realized that though he is being totally hamstrung, that President Barack Obama, on the popular vote, won by over 5 million votes, and yet the minority Republican Party has been able to just bring government to a crawl, if you will, if it's not, in fact, as it did do a couple months ago, shut government down, and are carrying an agenda that is far out of proportion to their actual numbers as it pertains to the democratic process. And that also makes you understand that there are millions of more people who just don't even bother to vote anymore. It is another one of those debates that needs to be engaged, if you will. Folks need to talk about it, if you will, need to reflect on it. Again, I'm your co-host, Ronald Lee Edwards, coming to you on a Wednesday night. My co-host, Mr. Allen, Donald Allen, has been delayed. He had certain obligations as it pertains to the airport. Flights are being delayed, of course, all across the country, even though the storm has basically rolled out of the east into the Atlantic Ocean. We thought that Mr. Allen would be able to join us, but it appears that he's not going to be able to do that for whatever reason. And so we hope for the best, if you will. But we're looking at a number of subject matters tonight, and one of them also is more of a local issue, but it shows how people unfortunately find out that they are as marginalized as people of color, and it has to do with our football stadium that is being built here. It should be completed by July of 2016. Hopefully, the new home of the Minnesota Vikings, if you will, the 2-8-1 Vikings. Unfortunately, there will be significant coaching changes as soon as the season ends. You can see it coming. What it's really unfortunate because the blame should not be placed on Coach Leslie Frazier. But for whatever reasons, they continue to play a quarterback that does not have the proficiency, nor does he have the record of winning, Christian Ponder. But, hey, that's a discussion for another time and a more sports-like program, if you will. But the Viking Stadium, which is going to be built for a little over $1 billion, in fact, right now it's at $1.2 billion, if you will. Taxpayers of the state of Minnesota and the Vikings and the NFL are sharing in this endeavor, if you will, find themselves in a situation in which the stadium really is going to cost a whole lot more than what they think. But what has happened is that so many Minnesotans had been promised that the materials and et cetera that we use, particularly the steel, because we have a very rich history here in Minnesota as it pertains to mining, if you will, taconite and et cetera, in which you make the pellets that go into forging the steel and et cetera. And there used to be a time in this country when this nation was one of the best steel makers in the world. That's, of course, no longer the case, you know. America's steel industry basically 20 years ago or thereabouts, a little longer, disappeared. And Japan, China, and Brazil have supplanted the United States in many respects. And, of course, the old giants of the steel industry in Europe, particularly in Germany and Luxembourg, have continued to hold their place. And last Friday in our beloved city, Minnesotans found out that at least 20%, and it's 20% of the best steel, if you will, that which will be utilized to really hold the stadium up and its massive roof and et cetera, that they found out that steel would be manufactured in Luxembourg and Germany, if you will, those two nations. And what they really didn't know, though, is that the two companies in Luxembourg and Germany are actually now subsidiaries of the very powerful steelmaking company in India, and the little brown man of India, who also controls two of the plants, if you will, that refine the iron ore in northern Minnesota, are also owned by this Indian steel company. And so what basically will happen, they'll mine it. It will be bought from them by themselves. I mean, they will actually buy from themselves and, of course, charge the taxpayers of the state of Minnesota, I'm sorry, and then shipped to Luxembourg/and Germany, if you will, and there it will be forged and et cetera. And in July of next year, this very fine-tuned steel will be ready to be shipped back to the United States and will be used about 20%, a little over 20%, so basically about 7,500 tons or whatever will be used to put these state-of-the-art steel rods and girders and et cetera in place. And, of course, it's been a real killing, if you will, for, I'm talking about an affirmative killing, if you will, profit for steel manufacturers or steel makers and et cetera outside of the United States. Hasn't done anything really for the economy in northern Minnesota, though our politicians here are telling their constituency in northern Minnesota that, you know, they will certainly be a part of the profit that will come from, as well as the jobs. And, man, we talk quite a bit about jobs here. 7,500 workers will work on this stadium during the period from basically January 2014 to basically July of 2016. And, of course, one of the things we did here in the last 14 minutes of tonight's program is that there was a lot of promises made to the most depressed of our population, and that basically was Native Americans and blacks, if you will, though the Native Americans economically are doing much better than African Americans in this state, and so that basically puts African Americans at the bottom of the rung. And at one time, a year and a half ago, there were just these tremendous numbers of participation and anticipated participation when the commissioner of the State Human Rights Department, an African-American by the name of Kevin Lindsay, was saying that 32% of the population, in other words, 32% of the workers, would be people of color. That kind of fascinated me. I've been involved for a number of decades with regards to these kinds of issues in this state, and I just couldn't understand where they were going to find the workers of color, particularly African Americans, because there isn't that percentage around, and there have been reports and empirical data that has been made available. In fact, there was a report in 2010 which really pointed out the absence of African Americans in many of the categories and disciplines that would be needed to ensure that you or your community would be hired to work on this massive stadium. Again, 7,500 workers. The tag sheets basically indicated that each and every day, starting pretty much in April of 2014, there would be a minimum of 1,500 workers on site, if you will, as the stadium is being built and demolition takes place. This is going to be a unique stadium to the extent really never heard it done this way that much, is that as opposed to the demolition of the entire Metro Stadium or Met Stadium, they're going to do it by segments. In other words, they will take a portion of the stadium. The demolition will take place. The area will be secured and then begin to be prepared for the new foundation and structure and et cetera. And so they will do that, so which means the demolition company will actually be on site for that period from actually January of 2014 right up to probably June of 2016, if you will. So it's kind of a haphazard approach because, man, if you have any kind of accident, if you will, and something goes wrong either with the demolition that is happening or with the new construction that's going on, you will be set back, and there are some penalty clauses here in our beloved state that the construction company or construction managers, they're now referred to, M.A. Mortensen of Minneapolis, specifically of Golden Valley, which is adjacent to Minneapolis. If the facility is not ready in July, and if certainly by August of 2016 for the first NFL game, that Mortensen will have to pay a fine of $5 million. You know, that's a quick way to go bankrupt because your margin of profit, according to the documentation that's been filed, is only going to be maybe $11 or $12 million, you know, on this massive $1 billion project, with cost overruns expected to be about $248 million at a minimum, which really will take you out of business. The Vikings, in fact, last week, in an effort to help the construction management firm of M.A. Mortensen, actually kicked in another $26.4 million in order to help M.A. Mortensen bring the project in at $767 million, as is required, as opposed to M.A. Mortensen was straining, indicating that they could do no better than $737 million. And so people started talking about cutting the amenities and et cetera, and the Vikings being magnanimous, if you will, said, "Oh, you don't need to do that. We'll give you another $41 million in this package. We'll actually make a loan to M.A. Mortensen of $26.4 million to help them come in, and then hopefully they will recover that if they bring the project in before schedule and et cetera. But in the meanwhile, folks are now finding out that 20%, and that is 100% of the prime steel that will be used for the Viking Stadium, will come from overseas, and that the most significant profiteer, if you will be the largest steel manufacturer in India. I don't think anyone had a clue that the little brown man of India, the subcontinent, if you will, was going to make money off of the American version of football here in the state of Minnesota on the edge of downtown Minneapolis. And so that's been quite an issue, but the issue that is really being kept away in the last 7 minutes of tonight's program is that the African-American community is going to receive a total of $700,000 in alleged training money out of a package of over $1.2 billion. Just think about that. Now, the African-American community is being told that they will not be needed, that what workers that can be found that look like us will come out of the union halls. The only problem is there's nothing approaching the number of 400, 500 to 600 African-Americans that would be working on this project. And the Sports Facility Authority, which is the governing body under law, has reversed the goals. 32% of the businesses and et cetera will be Caucasian women. 9% will be organizations or businesses of color, if they can find them. And the employment situation, which initially was 11% people of color and 9% women, have just been totally reversed. It'll now be 11% white women and 9% are people of color, if you will. And there's been nothing but just absolute silence from those that have been saying for the last year and a half that they will be the managers and make sure that the right thing is done on behalf of the African-American community, making sure that the African-American community benefits and as part of the economic surge and et cetera, nothing but silence. Now, we will say this as we move towards about the last 4 minutes of tonight's program, is that there will have to be an accounting starting as early as the first week in April, when the first statistics have to be made available as it pertains to the beginning of demolition, which will start around the 3rd or 4th of January. And so there will have to be a revealing of the numbers, and that will be a clear indication. And of course, obviously, in that this is a project and much of it will be outdoors to the extent of the outer shell and et cetera, people can go down on their own and look and see how many people of the African-American persuasion, Native American persuasion, and et cetera, that are working and drawing excellent compensation. Now, I'll tell you one thing that happened in closing. About 8 months ago, a group out of Kansas City, Missouri, known as the Gentleman of the Round Table, approached the Sports Facility Authority and the Minnesota Vikings and indicated that they knew that there was no percentage whatsoever of African-American journeymen and et cetera here and specialists and artisans here in Minnesota. And so they offered to bring in a significant number of African-Americans who were a part of the Gentlemen of the Round Table. And it appeared at one point in July that an arrangement and accommodation had been reached, and then there was some envelope passed around to the director of the Civil Rights Department of Minneapolis, and negotiations seemed to collapse. But what has happened in the last 2 weeks, just for those that try to monitor this, the Gentlemen of the Round Table out of Kansas City have arrived here. They brought in 8 workers. These are 8 workers who are highly skilled, have significant journeyman hours, if you will, extremely qualified carpenters, if you will. So they will be on the early phase as they begin to put up the shell and et cetera. And so they are here. Housing and accommodations have been found for them, if you will. And they are awaiting the processing of their application to go to work for the subcontractors on the site. If there is a failure by the subcontractors or by the Sports Facility Authority to hire these 8 African Americans who bring the requisite skills to the job site, they have their attorneys ready to go into federal court and to file a lawsuit. Now, this suit would probably not stop the actual construction of the facility, but it will create a lot of pain for the NFL and the Vikings and certainly the so-called liberal image that is, you know, so standard, at least verbally, here in the state of Minnesota. So the Gentlemen of the Round Table of Kansas City, Missouri, have positioned their personnel. These individuals are here and are ready to work, and so it'll be very, very interesting. Well, as we begin to wrap on tonight's program, we're sorry that Mr. Allen was not able to join us, if you will, apparently not back from the airport, but certainly we feel that it is important for the information that we have provided on tonight's show. You know, in many respects, it is a combination of information and teaching, if you will. There are some things that we reflected on that talk in terms of the mood of this nation, if you will, and the problems that this nation faces. But with every problem, there should always be a solution. And one of the things that we have always encouraged here on these programs and in our other mediums that we are connected with, newspaper column, television program, website, and et cetera, is that we must always have a solution, and we must have a series of solutions which meet, address, and quote-unquote eliminate the problem that one is being faced with. And so we will continue to do that, and we look forward to our, having you and welcoming you to join us at 8:30 next Wednesday. By the way, we continue to keep our eye, as we said on the top of this program, we continue to keep our eye on the situation in the China Sea, if you will. Chinese military forces in the form of naval ships, aircraft carrier, and et cetera, on the move, United States on the move, and cooler heads, we'll put it like that, attempting to make sure that both nations stand down and there is some kind of mutual understanding and a kind of a pullback. So we watch that very, very closely because, as we said at the top of this program this evening, in a situation like that with nuclear-armed adversaries, if you will, just the wrong kind of situation. You know, what was it, about 10, 11 years ago, you know, a Chinese fighter plane clipped an American surveillance aircraft. I think it was a P-3. And, next thing you knew, there were American forces moving towards China. China put its forces on alert. It's one of the reasons why the Chinese indicated they would never be caught off guard again and began to really enhance their military hardware, particularly upgrading their Navy, if you will, acquiring the aircraft carrier, which, if I'm not mistaken, was built in Russia, was a part of the Russian naval flotilla. Russians decided to sell the aircraft carrier to the Chinese so Chinese could begin to augment their air and sea naval power in that part of the world. And so both sides have been preparing for a long time. But anyways, we welcome the opportunity to be with you, and we will be back next week. Again, this is Ron Edwards, and this is the Ron and Don Show.